Thank you for listening to this talk, produced by the Art Gallery of South Australia.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Emma Fay and I'm the Assistant Director of Operations here at the Art Gallery of South Australia. And I'm delighted to be speaking with you this afternoon about recovery through nature. And I'm speaking here on a few key works in the 18th Biennial of Australian Art called Inner Sanctum. But before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge that we're meeting on the lands of the Kaurna people. And I pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging. And it's especially important to acknowledge the ongoing connection First Nations people have with their country when we're talking about recovery through nature. For many of us, I mean, this was my reflection, is that thinking about the importance of nature and its connection to our wellness or our well-being is something that seems to be almost circuitous or circular. We know it's really good for us. We know it's important. And yet sometimes we need to be reminded in quite pointed ways. And we have a long-standing traditions of almost prescribing nature for our health and our well-being and our recovery. And if we think about from the early 1600s through to the 1800s in Britain, for instance, people were quite often prescribed taking the waters, going to the coast, taking in the fresh sea air, swimming in the seas. I've had a long-standing fascination with the Japanese tradition of forest bathing. And I don't know if anyone here knows that term, shinrin-yoku, which literally means bathing in the forest, except that it's not meant to be bathing in the forest. It's actually about spending time, genuine time, with all of your five senses activated in amongst nature. And it's often described as a bridge towards opening yourself up through to connection. And I think that there is something really beautiful about that when we think about what art galleries do, what art museums do in terms of creating portals and connections to other worlds and other places and sensations. And even further, when then we translate that into this experience here, that Jose da Silva, the curator of Inner Sanctum, the 18th Biennial of Australian Art, has created, is this incredibly special, beautiful world within a world. Jose conceived the Adelaide Biennial in five chapters or five parts: the inland sea, a clearing, a periphery, the river path, a quiet spot, and the writing of love and finding it. Now, I could speak about the connection between the artists involved in the Biennial and each of these chapters in great length when it comes to nature, because I believe that they all have explored that in different ways. But I, alas, don't have that time, just a mere 20 minutes or so. So I'm just going to speak about a few artists and a few of these projects. And of course, I'm also open to questions at the end if anyone would like to explore these themes more. But I think what Jose has created through this biennial is this incredibly beautiful poetic scaffold. He has given us these sort of parentheses in which to have these incredibly beautiful experiences as audiences, but also the artists who have been invited to make work. The works are quite expansive and they've traversed quite a number of different materials, executions, experiences, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I think the other thing that I've loved is that he's created almost a series of detours for us to explore and to find our way through the biennial in the process of finding our way through the art gallery. So for instance, you won't just find this exhibition downstairs or in these upstairs galleries here in the Western Wing, but you'll find them throughout the whole of the Art Gallery of South Australia, as we are right here in Gallery 6. So the first artist I wanted to speak about is actually Seth Birchall, because of course I'm standing in front of his work right now. And you'll notice it's a very intentional exhibition of this series of works. Seth has composed a number of large-scale and small-scale paintings of landscapes, of trees, of lunar moments, of waterfalls. He's chosen, in working with Jose, to have them installed against a bright green wall. And he's also positioned a beautiful green chair in front of these works in order to foster a different sort of appreciation and contemplation of the works. And of course, we have benches and ottomans scattered throughout the gallery to allow people to have that contemplative moment. But there hasn't been a moment in this entire exhibition that green chair has not had a bottom on it. And it's gorgeous to see. Seth's work is really intriguing to me because artists have long been obsessed with nature. And often involves and reflects nature. Seth's practice in regards to these time of day paintings, as he refers to them, started in 2014 after a very important moment for him in his development. He undertook an 8-day hike throughout the wilderness of Tasmania, and at that point started creating these special, I think quite instinctive paintings and drawings that captured moments and feelings that were provoked by nature. And it's a practice he's continued ever since. However, it's taken a completely different form. So the works here are not necessarily places he's been. They're quite often composites. He's borrowed images from the internet. He spoke at an artist talk in the opening weekend, and I found it really, yeah, curious. He sort of said, look, it's a magical, it's almost like a portal. I'm creating environments and worlds that I might like to inhabit, of the spaces I want to be, the places my mind takes me to. And he borrows images from friends, so on their social media accounts, the places that they're going, the things that are special to them, and he often weaves those elements together in amongst his own lived experience and memories. While we're standing here in Gallery 6, I would also like to speak a little bit about Teela George's work. Now, you might have spent some time in the atrium. There's a number of significant embroidered large-scale tapestry works. Well, they're not technically tapestries, but that's the word that comes to my mind, partly because of their form. There's so much interest in her works because of their highly textured nature. They're described as sky pieces, and they're her landscapes of the sky. And they're sort of her, she speaks about her practice as trying to contain or capture a fleeting moment of the sky. And if you've ever laid on your back on a grassy hill and you looked up at the sky, it changes almost on the instant. So the idea of trying to capture the essence of something that's constantly moving and changing in something as laborious as embroidery is something that's really curious to me. And she's very nuanced, so she uses different sorts of fibres. So there's a sort of a glossiness and a harsh, hearty nature to some of them. There's some coloration involved, you know, folds of blue and yellow and red. She also introduces these incredibly beautiful heavy bronze elements to sort of counterbalance the lightness of the textiles. And, you know, there's also heavy-duty seams and blanket stitching to kind of create borders and edges, where, of course, with the sky, there is no such thing. So once again, they're of nature, but they're also imagined. And why do we feel compelled to do that? Why do we find that so interesting when nature's literally outside of our doorstep? And in Seth's artist talk, he spoke to that specifically and said, well, we are fortunate to live in a country where nature is accessible to us, but in our daily lives quite often we're not able to avail ourselves of all of that all of the time. And so that, again, is sort of that part of that portal. You'll also see Teela George's work in the Elder Wing alongside a John Russell painting titled A Clearing in a Forest. And I think the pairing of those two works together is incredibly beautiful and again talks to Jose's idea of taking us on a journey, almost like a garden, through the gallery where we can discover different ways that these works come to life and the different ideas that artists have over different generations. Because John painted that painting in 1891, and now we have Teela George making these beautiful works for the Adelaide Biennial now in 2024, and yet the ideas and the concept of bringing nature to life in that instinctive, impulsive way ring true, just as they did then. And while we're in the Elder Wing, I wanted to talk a little bit about Kate Llewellyn's project. Now, for any of you who've spent some time with the Biennial over the last couple of weeks or couple of months now, you would have noticed that Jose's concept for the Biennial involved a number of writers, poets in the main, as well as visual artists, and that was something quite different for the Adelaide Biennial of Art. I don't recall ever seeing us work with so many writers in that way, where their work as poets and writers was positioned in the same context as visual artists. But it sort of lifts the lyricism is very strong throughout. Now Kate, I don't know if any of you had the privilege of hearing Kate throughout the opening talks and events, but she is an extraordinary woman. She's so inspiring. And she wrote a poem called Faith, for the exhibition, which was then reimagined or came to life in another form when it was developed in a composition by Anna Kors and was performed by the Adelaide Chamber Singers over a series of performances. And there's just so many different touch points with that work by Kate that I feel warrants discussion. It comes to life in so many different forms. I can't think of the poem without hearing the singing and the words. Picture a green chair under an olive tree, and I can see Erin's looking at me. If you heard that performance by the Adelaide Chamber Singers, it just resonates throughout your whole body. It was absolutely exquisite. And I'm going to just borrow this little map. So in the Elder Wing, if you haven't already got a copy of this, the poem written by Kate is on the back. And on the front, you have a hand-drawn map of Kate's garden by the artist Jeff Wilson. Just another beautiful touch point. And Kate's work, thank you. Kate's work, I think, you know, anyone who knows it will know why it's so powerful. But it's so intimate, and it's so personal, and it's so relatable because we know what it's like to embody those beautiful domestic spaces that nourish us. And she spends a lot of time in her garden. She says she's not concerned about weeding, so she just finds it very nourishing and very enjoyable. And you can see from that beautiful map just how much love and energy has gone into making it a productive, beautiful garden. But her poem, oh, thank you. I've got a little demonstration of the map here. Thank you. I think, you know, the beautiful thing about the Chamber Singers' rendition, if you like, or response to the poem, was that it made it a collective experience. Poetry, just like visual art, can be quite individual in the way that you experience it and appreciate it. But in its performance, it became a collective experience, and one that I think will live on in lots of people's hearts and minds beyond the day. And something that I just wanted to quote from Jose in the catalogue where he wrote about Kate. He talked about Kate's poem as a pondering on what it might mean to have a spiritual life in the contemporary present. And I thought that was just so beautiful. In her poem, just one little stanza which just stood out to me was, "Night is full of light. The sun still rose and night fell. I buried dahlia rhizomes upside down like bombs. And when they rose, they turned around. All flesh is fire held in time." And that as a theme is something, you know, as I said, it's everywhere in the gallery, nature, if you turn to it. And we are, with great anticipation, looking forward to the Nature Festival, which we'll be partnering with later this year. And they've just announced their theme called Pleasance, where there'll be a bit of an imagining of AGSA as a large home and our courtyard garden as the space that sits at the back. So that's definitely something to be alert to and to look forward to. And I love the idea of that concept and that it positions the gardener and the artist next to each other, which I think if we think about Kate's work, John Russell's work, many, many other artists in this entire building, it really rings true. I've put a few more minutes. I wanted to also talk about Tina Stefanow's work as a way of talking about connecting with nature and in particular the non-human. We've just had the most incredible series of days where Tina Stefanow, a performance artist who works with young people in the main, but also creatures, non-human creatures, horses. She's got her work downstairs in the exhibition as a multi-channel video work that's presented in the round. The work's called Hymenals. Did I pronounce that correctly? Beautiful. And she also uses her voice. Her voice is an absolute part of her arsenal of artistic tools and equipment as a way of connecting and finding, building bridges between the human and the non-human. And so the work downstairs you'll see is a group of six young women, prepubescent, with aging, elderly female horses. And these young girls ride the horses, but not ride them as a means to an end, but commune with them through their bodies and through the humming that they do together. And the work is really abstract and it's quite an unusual work to try and get into, but when you read a little more about Tina's work and and certainly see and participate in some of the projects that she has done over the course of the biennial. It really comes to life. We've heard some beautiful stories from the performers and from the audience of seeing Tina work with these young performers in improv at the Adelaide Zoo, for instance, of crossing barriers and working with these very ancient tortoises and them responding beautifully to the humming and the singing and the touch of young people, and how that collectively becomes sort of a, I guess, an inspiration for all of us to see what's possible when we turn our mind to it. And we just had an event here at the gallery, one of the final performances, alongside Belinda de Broekhier's work in the Melrose Wing, and we had over 100 people all gathered around. It was incredibly special. So I really encourage you to visit Tina Stefanow's work as well. I think I, just in terms of my last statement before I take any questions, I was looking at sort of like it was a tourism website, I guess, or a promotional piece that was talking about Shinrin-yoku, the practice of forest bathing, which, as I said, became really popularised in Japan during the 1980s, which was their big tech boom and everything became high-rises and very, very dense city dwelling, and they were looking to really promote the importance of connection with health and nature. But in this sort of little promo piece, it just made me giggle a little bit. It says, when you've been busy at work all week, it can be hard to slow down. You may have been rushing around so much, you no longer know how to stand still. Walking with a guide who is a trained forest therapist can help you feel more comfortable and find the right environment to fit your needs. And I thought, that's exactly what galleries do. And our wonderful guides as well, in that sometimes you don't know what you need until you walk in the door, and there it is waiting for you. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. It's been my pleasure to meet with you. Thank you.